You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Warriors Off-Court, the San Francisco Chronicles NBA podcast. I'm your host, Warriors beat writer Connor Letourneau, and today I'm joined by Jeff Siegel, who runs earlybirdrights.com, a tremendous resource for NBA salary cap analysis. Jeff came on less than 24 hours after news broke that the Warriors were dealing Willie Cauley-Stein to Dallas for a future second-round pick to get further under the hard cap. During our conversation, we break down that trade in depth, look at where Golden State goes from here, discuss what exactly a trade exception is, and of course, look at some possible trade scenarios involving D'Angelo Russell.
Jeff, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. I really appreciate it. I'm a fan of your website, Early Bird Rights. Anyone who hasn't been there, go check it out. It has a breakdown of every single NBA team salary cap situation in detail. It has news and updates, and it's going to be a tremendous resource to any NBA fan leading up to the trade deadline on February 6th. Jeff, I wanted to have you on basically just to preview the deadline a little bit. We're already starting to see some dominoes fall, especially with the Warriors. As you know, the Warriors traded Willie Cauley-Stein yesterday to Dallas for a future second-round pick. That was basically just to get further under the hard cap. What were your initial thoughts when you saw that move?
I mean, I think it struck me as the move to make when they wanted to elevate Marquese Chris and Kai Bowman to the full roster. They needed some sort of room below the hard cap to make that happen. And I think Cauley-Stein made the most sense. He made a lot of sense for Dallas as well. You know, the fact that Golden State gets back a second round pick that's probably going to be like number 55 or number 56 this year is, you know, just sort of ancillary to the deal. You know, Dallas had to send something back, and maybe that pick turns out to be useful. Usually not. Usually picks after about 45 or 50, you know, have a hard time becoming, you know, useful NBA players. But, you know, I think for Golden State, it's something where, you know, Cauley-Stein signed up to play with Steph Curry, and then Curry's been out, and it's kind of he signed up for a very specific team that the Warriors didn't end up being. So, you know, moving him on to a team that will use him in the best way that he'll ever be used in his career to this point, you know, I think that that holds a lot of goodwill with him and with, you know, the rest of the league as a whole.
Yeah, and I'm happy for Willie in the sense that he's going into a situation in Dallas where he'll probably be able to start right away at center, filling in for the injured Dwight Powell on a playoff-bound team. And this is a guy who's never played in the playoffs, but there's also part of me that remembers back last summer when he signed with the Warriors. He was downright giddy when we met him in Las Vegas during Summer League. Right after he signed, he was just so excited about the opportunity to join a winning organization and to play along Steph and be coached by Steve. And you know, even when they were losing, he seemed to maintain a very positive aura about him. You know, he seemed to still be enjoying the situation. I talked to him a couple weeks ago, and he said, you know, he has that player option, and he said, I definitely want to come back here. I'm gonna pick up my player option. I already know that. And, you know, here we are, you know, a couple weeks later, and he never even got the chance to log meaningful minutes with Steph because of Steph's injury. But, you know, that's the NBA, right? Like, these types of things happen. It was unfortunate with the timing, but the Warriors had to make the move that was going to benefit them next season.
Yeah, and I mean, as much as he will talk about, you know, how much he likes the Warriors and how much he sort of would like to have gotten the chance to play with Steph and Clay and Draymond perhaps next year, and D'Angelo Russell as well, you know, perhaps as well, depending on who of those guys are still around, particularly in Russell's case. I mean, this situation is going to be awesome for him in Dallas. You know, he's never played with a guy who can pass like Doncic. Even if he had stayed in Golden State, he wouldn't have gotten to play with a guy who can hit him on the roll like Doncic can. And I think that's, you know, as sad as he might be to leave Golden State, I think Dallas is pretty much a tailor-made perfect situation for him.
Right, and, you know, obviously the player option translates, so he could pick up his player option in Dallas next season and maybe build out a future there. Dwight Powell is a solid center, but it's not like he's one of the best centers in the league. You know, you can compete with him for minutes when he comes back from that injury. So, it'll be interesting to see what happens with him. But I'm also curious just what the next steps for the Warriors are. Now, I think the general assumption is that part of the reason they did this was to convert both Ty Bowman and Marquise Chris's deals, two-way contracts, two standard NBA deals. And, you know, I'm confident that that's definitely going to be the case with Marquise Chris. I think it's probably the case with Ty Bowman as well. The nice thing about trading Cauley Stein as opposed to one of the other guys is that it did get you just barely far enough under the hard cap to bring both of those guys on. But the Warriors have options now. You know, they could convert Marquise Chris, which to me feels like a no-brainer. They need a center long-term. He's only 22 years old. But they could also keep Ty Bowman on a two-way deal and maybe bring in someone else into that 15th spot. And the thing about the two-way deal, as you know, is those guys can come back up to the NBA team when the G League season is done. So for the Santa Cruz Warriors, that'll be March 28th. And he could finish out the season, and then they could retain his rights so that he'd be a restricted free agent. And by not playing as much for the later part of the season, he might not get any better offers this summer. They can easily bring him back as a restricted free agent. If you're the Warriors, what are you thinking here? Do you just – you don't mess around, you bring him on the 15-man roster, or do you consider keeping him on that two-way?
I mean, you consider keeping him on the two-way just because that's sort of the prudent, sort of cold-hearted way to do it, especially if he's out of days right now. Then he kind of sits for the next 2 months, and then he comes in on March 28th when the Santa Cruz season ends. And then you play the restricted free agent game because, you know, restricted free agency for two-way guys, the qualifying offer is just another two-way contract. So it's like it's really, really, you know, harmful to those two-way guys who actually – break out and play well. We saw this with Ty Wallace a couple years ago where he, you know, broke out with the Clippers and then they gave him a qualifying offer of another two-way and he ended up taking like a two-year minimum deal that the Clippers ended up matching. And it's like, I understand if Golden State wants to do that. I think that's the right move from their sort of salary cap management perspective and roster management. But, you know, this guy has been a part of their team all year. I think the personal side of it is where this becomes more of an issue, and that's why I would expect, because of how well the Warriors sort of take care of their guys, with Cauley Stein, with, you know, as we've seen up and down the roster, they take care of their guys, and that's why I would expect that Bowman will be probably converted sooner rather than later. I'd almost expect Bowman to be be converted or signed to a new deal first, and then Chris uses the rest of his days and then is converted later so that they have that open roster spot just in case a trade pops up between now and February 6th.
That's a good point. I didn't think about that, but you're right. Marquise does still have about 20 days left because he's had such a weird year, by the way. He's going to probably end up signing three different contracts with the same team within like a 4-month span. It's been an odd year for him, but just kind of looking at all the options here, let's say they decide to leave open that spot, that 15th spot. Who could they realistically go out and get that would make sense right now?
I mean, I think at that point they're looking at, is there a team that is looking to trade a very, very small salary? Because, of course, they can't take on anything more than very, very small. Is there somebody who's willing to do that and will throw in a second-round pick? I think that's sort of what they're looking at. It's mostly a financial thing, mostly to just get a future draft pick. I don't think that there's somebody out there that they're like targeting that they can spend you know, $1 million on or $1.5 million on and try to fill that 15th spot for somebody like that. I think it's really more about if they keep that spot open, then if somebody needs to dump a very small amount of money in some sort of three-team deal or just, you know, to duck the tax or whatever, they've got that spot open and they could just take that guy and a second-round pick, probably cut him, and then, you know, elevate either Bowman or Chris or whatever they want to do.
Yeah, no, that you make a good point. It'll be interesting. Like I said, I do expect them to probably just bring them both on, largely for those personal reasons that you alluded to. But to me, this is another example of kind of the salary cap gymnastics that Bob Myers is so good at. You know, it's on the surface, it seems like a really minor deal. Obviously, you're not getting much back in terms of draft picks or anything for a guy who's been your starting center. But I do think that for a team that is trying to build toward returning to contention next season, it was a move they had to make. And I think it makes a lot of sense for both teams. I think Dallas is obviously super happy with this as well. So kind of looking ahead a little bit toward this summer, you know, the Warriors have, I believe they have 11 players under contract for next season. And, you know, this season's obviously lost at this point. It's all about ironing out that rotation for 2020-21. And so that leaves them four open spots with Cauley Stein gone, and it looks like they're going to convert the deals of Bowman and Chris. You know, they're only going to have a few free agents on their roster entering next summer. So the question is, you know, what do they do going forward? They're gonna face a little bit of a numbers crunch. So they're probably gonna need to get rid of at least one, maybe two more guys. You know, and they might not want to get rid of the guys that are gonna be free agents this summer. They really like Glenn Robinson. I know that Alec Burks, personally, people have kind of written him off and said, oh, they should trade him. But the Warriors have needed bench scoring, even when they were really good. They needed someone that could get to the rim easily, and he's been very adept at that. So I'm personally not convinced that he shouldn't figure into your plans for next season. One guy that would make sense to me as a potential casualty is Jacob Evans. Jacob Evans has not proven he's an NBA player. He's dealt with some more injuries this season, hasn't been able to get into a groove. He's actually in the G League right now. When he has played, he just hasn't provided much. Do you think he's the type of guy that they could end up packaging in a trade where it's like they just kind of unload him to someone and maybe even attach a pick just to get off that contract?
Well, I don't know that you would want to attach a pick to get off of that small of a contract for a guy who, you know, was just a first-round pick, you know, a very short while ago. I think there are teams out there who might be interested in taking Evans even just for free. If Golden State was willing to just dump him for free, I don't know that they'll have to, you know, that they'll have to attach anything to get rid of him, especially if we're talking about in the summer. Like right now, it might be a little bit more difficult just because of, you know, everybody's got roster, you know, roster spot issues. But once you get into the summer, you're allowed to have up to 20 guys. You know, another team could take a quick flyer on Evans, see how he is in training camp, figure out if they want to pick up that $3.6 million option for 21-22. And just sort of, I mean, I think another team would take a flyer on him, and I don't think Golden State would have to pay to necessarily get off of him. You know, in terms of their roster crunch just for next season, you know, that's going to be an issue, you know, and I think that's where something where Chris and Bowman, if they sign mostly non-guaranteed deals for next season, those are the first guys off on the chopping block for me, you know, especially Bowman, who is, you know, a really fun story, a really, you know, interesting guy to watch play, a really good, you know, locker room guy from everything I've heard as well. So, you know, it's, but I think when it comes down to that roster crunch, it comes down to, you know, they've got 11 guys under contract, if you include Damian Lee, who, you know, I think is sort of the best of those guys who is not, you know, not for sure on the roster, other than, you know, I think Burks and Robinson are probably ahead of Lee, but in terms of Lee, Chris, and Bowman, Lee is sort of their guy who makes the most sense for the roster moving forward. you know, then they've got the Andre Iguodala, you know, massive trade exception. They might have Andre Iguodala himself, literally, if he comes back on, you know, the taxpayer mid-level or something this summer. So that's another two guys, maybe even three, if they're going to split that Iguodala trade exception two different ways. You know, we'll see what they want to do with that. They've got their own first round pick, which might be, you know, whatever, 2-3. It could be number one overall. You know, it's going to be in that probably top six at least. And so that's another roster spot, unless they, you know, of course, unless they move that in a trade, you know, particularly, you know, say a sign in trade for a guy like Bogdan Bogdanovic in the summer, maybe they look into something like that. But there's a lot of, they've got a lot of different guys. And so I'm not sure that like Chris and Bowman are two guys that I would plan to have around long-term, just because, you know, there's going to be a roster crunch issue. And same thing with Alec Burks and Glenn Robinson, that maybe one of those guys makes it, you know, onto the team long-term, but they've got, you know, 11 guys. If they're going to bring back Iguodala, if they're going to sign or trade for somebody with that Iguodala trade exception, they've got their own first round pick. Just, you know, there's a lot of guys for not very many spots.
We'll have more of my conversation with Jeff Siegel right after the break.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I've had a lot of people asking me about the trade exceptions. Obviously, they just got another trade exception. I believe it was around $2 million. Trade exception with the Willie Cauley-Stein deal. They had a $7 million trade exception with the Andre Iguodala deal. Just for those of us who aren't as well-versed on how that works and how the Warriors can use it, can you kind of explain that a little bit?
So the Iguodala trade exception for 17, it's basically
17
for seven.
Is what I meant, not seven, yeah.
Yeah, $17.3 million. It expires on the 6th of July of this year. So they've got literally just those first few days of July to use it. They can't use it up until basically June 30th because they've got hard cap issues. They can't add that much salary, of course. So they've got those first few days of July to use it. And they can use it to either trade for somebody making less than about $17.3 million, or they can work a sign-and-trade with another team to basically bring somebody in and just not have to match salary on him. And that's the biggest thing that a trade exception is used for, is if they wanted to trade for somebody making $15 million, they'd have to send out, say, $12 million normally, but they don't have to do that because they've got the Iguodala trade exception. So that's the big thing, is that they can basically – as long as the other team is willing to work with them, they can send out, say, their own first-round pick, which has no salary attached to it, and bring back somebody making up to that $17.3 million number. And that's, of course, going to add a ton of salary. They still have to pay that guy, and that guy, you know, counts toward their tax bill. But it's a way to sort of get somebody, not for free, because obviously they'll have to pay for it, but they don't have to match salary in that deal.
Right. So it's a nice little asset, but there are reasons why some teams won't use it at all. You know, a lot of teams will not let that deadline pass.
They'll let the deadline pass. I mean, even on big exceptions like this, because, like, you bring a guy in, you still got to pay that amount. You still have to pay that luxury tax bill. You know, Golden State is staring down the barrel at a particularly expensive next few years. You know, they're already in the repeater tax. If they can get out of it this year, then they'll get out of it for next year. But then they, you know, it'll be right back there in 21-22. I mean, if they use that trade exception, let's say they use that trade exception for a $15 million guy, they sign Iguodala or somebody else to the taxpayer mid-level, and then if they don't use that first round pick, you know, I think that they're going to be in the, you know, $100 million range for their tax bill. And if they do use that first-round pick, we're talking about $300 million in total salary and luxury tax. So it's, I mean, it can get very, very expensive very quickly for them.
Right. And the thing we haven't talked about, which is really the big domino in all this, is what do the Warriors do with D'Angelo Russell? D'Angelo Russell is you know, all-star caliber player, probably won't be an all-star this year, but he's putting up all-star numbers. He's been productive on an injury-thin team. But the big question is, can he play along Steph Curry? And he hasn't gotten much of a sample size to do that. In the small sample size they had, about three games, D'Angelo had the worst plus-minus in the entire NBA. I'm not convinced, I don't believe the Warriors are convinced, that they can play together. I think that's part of why their intent on bringing Steph back in March is that they want to see a larger sample size of them together. So I don't expect D'Angelo to get traded at the deadline, largely because I think they want to see him with Steph more. The timing doesn't really work out to make that happen. I think they're going to wait till the summer, be patient with it. But, you know, just from your understanding and talking to people, what do you think is kind of the market value for someone like D'Angelo in a potential trade? Because I've had some people throw out names to me that seem ridiculously like high asking prices for someone like D'Angelo. I've also had people mention just Robert Covington straight up, which doesn't feel like enough to me. What do you think is fair?
Yeah, I mean, I think Robert Covington straight up is closer to his value than something, you know, outlandish. Like, they're not trading him for Carl Anthony Towns. Like, that's not the way this is gonna work. You know, I think he's probably in a vacuum a negative value contract, just based on the fact that he makes so much money. And for the Warriors in particular, who are trying to win championships, he's not that kind of player. Like, Draymond Green is a 16-game player. D'Angelo Russell's not. He's an 82-game player. He's somebody who can significantly raise your floor and get you to a certain level of respectability, but he doesn't have that high-level ceiling as a playoff player. And, you know, I think that we saw a little bit of that with Brooklyn last year, where in a, you know, against a switching system, he's, you know, sort of unable to produce. He wasn't really, you know, even during the regular season last year, he didn't close a ton of games for Brooklyn. That was Spencer Dinwiddie. That was Caris LeVert. You know, they went away from Russell to close games last year. Not all the time, but, you know, about more than 25% of the time, I think they went away from Russell in those clutch moments. And so, you know, that's, you know, is that a max guy? Like, if you have a max guy on your team, like, don't you expect him to close 95% of these minutes, other than, you know, foul trouble and maybe an injury? Like, he should be out there. And if he's not, you know, he wasn't really one of their core guys last year. And, you know, I think that, you know, for Golden State, there's also the optics of it. Like, they basically sent out two first round picks and Andre Iguodala to get him, you know, and maybe Iguodala comes back next summer and he just sort of takes this year sabbatical with Memphis or whatever. But, like, they paid a first round pick to Brooklyn to sign him. They paid another first round pick to Memphis to get off of Iguodala's salary so that they could make the apron stuff work. And so, you know, value-wise, like, you would expect that they, even just a year later, they're going to want to sort of recoup some of that value. So whatever they get, they're, you know, somebody's going to have to sort of figure out how that's worth two first-round picks. And, you know, the Iguodala loss isn't as big a deal, obviously, the way that this season has gone. You know, the fact that they lost Iguodala for this season hasn't mattered. He wouldn't be making a massive difference on this team right now as constructed, particularly with Steph out. But, you know, they're going to have to sort of try to find a way to recoup those two first-round picks of value. And that's going to be difficult. Like, I don't know, you know, even a guy like Covington, he's not going for two first-round picks. He's probably going for one. But, you know, so if that's not enough for Russell, then perhaps they can find another piece of value from another team, work a three-way deal, something like that, to pick up the rest of that value.
Yeah, I think it's going to have to be some sort of complex three-team type deal, because I've looked at it a lot, and there's just not an obvious straight-up deal out there in my mind. You know, the one, you know, this is obviously the time of year where I'm getting a lot of readers and fans hitting me up with possible trade scenarios. There's a lot of people on NBA Trade Machine kind of figuring this out. Given the state of the season, there's not really much else to do. Probably the most intriguing one I've heard was the Warriors' first-round pick this June, which will obviously be probably a top-five pick, and D'Angelo Russell for DeAndre Ayton and Kelly Oubre.
What do you think of that when you just hear that?
I don't want anything to do with that if I'm the Warriors.
Really?
And I'm not sure that Phoenix necessarily wants anything. I mean, Phoenix probably, you know, the Russell Booker thing would be nice just for the two of them. But, like, Ayton, I mean, he's probably better than somebody you're getting with a top five pick in this draft. From what I've heard, this draft is not, you know, not particularly good, you know, and he's, you know, he's going to be 2 years older. So that sort of offsets a little bit. But, like, Ayton is probably more valuable than that first round pick this year, just based on what we've sort of seen from this draft, what I've heard from coming from this draft. And then, you know, Russell should be, you know, leaps and bounds more valuable than a guy like Oubre, you know. So I don't know. That's not something I would necessarily consider. I don't think getting, you know, a guy like Ayton necessarily fixes anything for Golden State long term. He reminds me of Russell in a way that he sort of helps you raise your floor as sort of a guy you can give the ball to, and he'll just sort of create something from the mid post or from the low post. But he's not somebody that necessarily helps raise their championship ceiling in a way like Covington would or somebody else in that vein. You know, I think that would be a pretty significant overpay for the Warriors. It's not something that you would necessarily rule out. We saw, you know, just exactly what they overpaid for to get Russell in the first place. So, you know, certainly they're willing to do that if they really feel strongly about it. But, you know, for me, that's not necessarily something that I would be super interested in.
Jeff, thank you so much for taking time out of your Saturday morning to talk with us. You know, super insightful stuff. Like I said at the beginning of the podcast, anyone who's, you know, really into the trade deadline or really into just figuring out some of the salary cap dynamics with the Warriors or other teams, definitely go check out earlybirdrights.com. It's a phenomenal resource. I've been using it myself several times recently, just while researching stories and what have you. And Jeff, is there any other place we need to find you on Twitter or anywhere else?
You can follow me on Twitter at JG Siegel, at Early Bird Rights. If you just want the Early Bird Rights content, you're fed up with how much I tweet during games or whatever. Earlybirdrights.com, home for all your salary cap stuff. We've got another thing coming hopefully right after the trade deadline that's going to be really big, that's not salary cap related, but is also really cool. Articles on every trade. I wrote 1,600 words on this Willie Cauley-Stein sort of three-team deal, which was obviously two separate trades, but it ended up, you know, encompassing three different teams. So if you're looking for a sort of in-depth analysis on that sort of thing, from on-court stuff to the salary cap implications to everything else, that's up on Early Bird Rights as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jeff, and I hope to catch up with you maybe sometime this summer once we start to get closer to free agency.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Warriors Off Court is part of the San Francisco Chronicle podcast network. Audrey Cooper is the editor-in-chief. If you like this show, we'd love it if you subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts. And if you've got a minute to give us a quick review, that helps us build our audience so we can keep growing. Follow me on Twitter at @con_cron and email me at cleturno@sfchronicle.com. Support Warriors Off Court and a lot of great journalism with a subscription to the San Francisco Chronicle. There are print and digital editions. Find out more at sfchronicle.com/subscribe.
Warriors or other teams, definitely go check out earlybirdrights.com. It's a phenomenal resource. I've been using it myself several times recently, just while researching stories and what have you. And Jeff, is there any other place we need to find you on Twitter or anywhere else?
You can follow me on Twitter at JG Siegel, at Early Bird Rights. If you just want the Early Bird Rights content, you're fed up with how much I tweet during games or whatever. Earlybirdrights.com, home for all your salary cap stuff. We've got another thing coming hopefully right after the trade deadline, that's going to be really big. That's not salary cap related, but it's also really cool. Articles on every trade. I wrote 1600 words on this Willie Cauley-Stein sort of three-team deal, which was obviously two separate trades, but it ended up, you know, encompassing three different teams. So if you're looking for a sort of in-depth analysis on that sort of thing, from on-court stuff to the salary cap implications to everything else, that's up on Early Bird Rights as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jeff, and I hope to catch up with you maybe sometime this summer once we start to get closer to free agency.
All right. Thanks for having me.
All right, thanks. Jeff, thanks so much, man.
Yep, appreciate it.
All right, man, I'll talk to you later.
Yep, bye.